You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Revelry on Richmond. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We are live at Revelry on Richmond. Great lunch spot, great happy hour spot. We'll be here till 7. Come hang out with us. They have over 30 TVs, best craft beer selection in the city. Being joined now by Paul Feinbaum. You know him from ESPN, king of the SEC. Paul, thanks for coming on. Big news, of course, in our parts. What do you make of Oklahoma and Texas moving to the SEC?
I think it's a fabulous move, and thanks for having me. It's something that a lot of people are speculated, you know, how did it happen? Why did it happen? I think in Oklahoma's case, it's been going on for some time. I began hearing as far back as 5 years ago that Oklahoma was making overtures to the SEC. Texas is a little more complex, but I think Texas took a good long look at where they were in the ecosystem of college football. This year, specifically, they lost the top player in the state to Alabama, whose father played at Texas, and I think that was a wake-up call. On top of all that, the Big 12 is a terrible league. It was going nowhere, and they needed to get out of there before it crashed and burned.
Paul, again, appreciate you joining us, spending some time with us. Always great when we can get someone like you on, especially talking about college football right before we get ready to get into the season. To follow up on that, where do we go from here? We know that with those two schools going to the SEC, that there's all kinds of rumor and innuendo about how do the rest of the schools kind of pick up the pieces and survive? Do you try and reconstruct the rest of the conferences? We heard the rumors about taking the NCAA out of it eventually and trying to create their own kind of football league of college teams. It just seems to me that there's a whole lot more to be figured out besides just the two teams going to the SEC in terms of how everybody else kind of picks up the pieces and survives.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma, and we're now 1 month removed from the news first breaking. It came out in the Houston Chronicle, and nobody has a move. There really isn't a piece on the chessboard to move that can counter what the SEC has already done. So what you're hearing now, and I think it's going to be announced next week, that the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 are going to form an alliance. So what? That's not going to solve the problem. Yeah, maybe they'll schedule each other. Maybe they'll all vote the same way. Maybe they'll all do whatever. But it's not going to change the fact that the SEC, now with Oklahoma and Texas, has essentially put everyone else, not out of business, but they put them in second or third place. The real question I have, in addition to that piece of the puzzle, is what's going to happen to the Big 12? I mean, Bob Bowlesby, the director, the commissioner, can scream and holler and, you know, make up allegations about this person or that person, send a cease and desist to ESPN. But it still doesn't change the fact that he's lost the two most valuable properties of the Big 12. And I'm not saying that there aren't good schools remaining. There are. Oklahoma State, Iowa State. TCU can have good seasons. Baylor has had really good seasons. But collectively, they just don't add up to very much. And I think the Big 12 made a mistake a couple of years ago. They could have taken Houston in. They could have taken Cincinnati or UCF. They stayed where they were. And then they just, you know, they couldn't really compete. But the Big 12 of the Power 5 conferences is the only one that never could get its own dedicated conference network off the ground. What I mean by that is the ACC network, the Big Ten network, of course, the SEC network, which I'm affiliated with. And that is a valuable revenue stream. It's also really good for all the other sports. Forget football, but you put every basketball game on, every baseball game, every softball, every volleyball. May not mean a lot in the big picture, but it really helps your overall status.
Paul, you're not a part of the SEC network. You pretty much are the SEC network. Did great work on it. Texas A&M, whenever this story first broke and before it was really official, it seemed like they didn't love the idea of, again, sharing a conference with Texas. Do you think that the Aggies are over it and that they're okay with it now?
No, I don't. I mean, they were very angry. You don't need me to tell you that, but I talked to a few people in pretty high positions at that university, and they felt betrayed. They felt like they had a handshake deal 10 years ago that Texas would never be part of it. And I frankly don't know whether they did or didn't, but it really doesn't matter now. I give them credit for just laying down the sword, and, you know, fighting for another day, because they were not going to win. Once this deal was in motion, Texas A&M, I think they needed four votes against it, and it was just a bad look. And by the way, A&M right now shouldn't look like they're upset, because they are the dominant program in the state. They have a really great football team. They have good others, good things in other sports. But I mean, with Jimbo Fisher, they don't need to take a back seat to anyone. But I do think there's going to be some lingering bad feelings, though. I don't think that has been put to bed yet.
Paul, I'm interested because you mentioned that, and Texas used to always be, you know, the end-all, be-all, top-notch first team that you talk about when you talk about college football in the state of Texas. We had this conversation the other day that we know that Sark is an unbelievable offensive mind. We know that he's had chances in the past. Was he the right guy for the job at Texas when you talk about facilities, city, and a campus, and all the things that Texas brings to the table?
I mean, I can't say absolutely. I think he was a good choice at the moment, which is all you could do. I'll put it this way. He was better than Tom Herman, who for whatever reason just flamed out. I thought Herman would be very successful. But ultimately, what Texas has to do is just stick with something for a while. It's funny, I interviewed Mack Brown the other night, and you know, I was in Texas a lot during 12 and 13, and I understand why he had to go, but they still haven't figured out how to replace him, and that's really the problem. And the problem at Texas isn't so much the head coach; it's the interference. I once asked Nick Saban. We were flying back together from I was doing an interview, a profile of him for ESPN, and he had, you know, it had been a couple of years removed, but Texas tried to hire him in 2013 to replace Mack Brown. They offered him more than $100 million. And I said, why didn't you go? Because, you know, that was about three or four national championships ago at Alabama. And he said, I couldn't deal with all the people who think they run that program. And he explained it. He said, there's at least 10 or 15 different boosters that you have to deal with on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, whatever it is. At Alabama, he doesn't deal with anyone. He walked in there the first day. And he said, I'm in charge. And he went to every different booster group of Alabama. And I'll clean up the language. But he basically told them to stay the blank out of his way. I mean, he said, I don't want to hear from any of you guys unless I call you. Just, I run this program. And Nick Saban could not do that at Texas. And until the university, and I think it's in better shape today with a newer president and a new athletic director who I think is very competent. Until that head coach can run his own program, Texas will not get out of its own way.
Paul, before I let Jeremy have the next question, did you call him coach or did you call him Nick? I'm just curious.
You know, it's interesting. I've done this a long time. I've always called coaches coach. And by the way, that way, in case you get older and forget their name, it's coach works at any athletic department in America.
Paul Feinbaum, our guest on the Killer Bees. And, Paul, you mentioned the next big shoe to drop. You think in college football is the Big 12. I call them the less than great eight. But also this college football playoff. It seemed like we were going to go to 12 teams, and now this move with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC has seemingly halted all of that. At what point do you think a playoff, an expanded playoff, comes into play? And do you think it might shrink now that Texas and Oklahoma are moving over to the SEC?
I think it's entirely possible, and I don't understand why. I've heard all the explanation of, well, it was unfair for the commissioner of the SEC to be sitting in the same room with Bob Bowlesby. They were agreeing on this. It didn't matter whether the SEC had stolen six members of the Big 12. The Big 12 desperately needed a 12-team playoff. So does the Pac-12. The ACC really doesn't, because the ACC has one school, Clemson, and they'll get in every year. But and the Big Ten, you know, has basically one school, Ohio State, and every once in a while somebody else shows up. But I think college football is hurting itself right now by throwing a fit and saying we're not going to do anything, because I know this comes off arrogant, you know, being associated with the SEC, but the SEC really doesn't care. They'll win it with four teams available, eight or 12, and I don't think that the 12 team is going to be agreed upon right now. I think everybody's pausing. And there's also a television factor here. A lot of people are pining for Fox to make a bid versus ESPN being the only person. the only entity, much like the NFL, where you have three or four entities involved. That's okay. It really doesn't matter. But I think college football in general has missed an opportunity because the sport needed something different. The college football playoff, as we know it, has gotten very stale.
Paul, let me bring it back locally a little bit because people have concerns because they care, including a guy that may or may not be doing this interview with us. But from a Houston Cougars perspective with Dana Hogerson, you talked about the fact that Texas just needs to get a guy and stick with them. There's been articles written about the hot seat this year in college football. Is Dana on it? We know that he had success at West Virginia, and, he's in a hotbed of recruits in Houston in the state of Texas. When do you start watching the clock if you're Dana Hogerson and the Cougar football program?
I respected what he did in the past, but the problem is if conversations like this are going on a really important talk show and station that matters, then you're already in trouble. And you kind of know when you see it, and if you can't stop the conversation, if you're always going to be, well, is he on the hot seat or isn't he on the hot seat? He's on the hot seat. And so that's the problem he has, because fans just have a very short span. I mean, when I first started in this business, coaches got 4 or 5 years, and you really couldn't have these type of conversations. Everybody got a chance. But now, because everybody has a voice, and I'm not trying to sound like an old-school guy, because I've embraced the world we live in because you have to. But with social media, with talk shows, with blogs, with podcasts, with everything that we deal with on a daily basis, if people start talking about your job, you're in trouble. And I've always felt, from an athletic director standpoint, you're better off just firing the coach than sticking around and then having the next year be worse than the previous year, which puts you 2 years behind the eight ball, as opposed to already starting a new search for a coach and being on your way. So I know that's a long, convoluted answer. I could give you a better answer as we watch the season unfold, but he better win. I'll put it that way.
Paul, Alabama appears to be Alabama again. Clemson is still Clemson. Who are a couple dark horses in college football that have a chance to crash the party in the playoff?
I may be drinking too much at lunchtime, but I do think Georgia has a shot. It all comes, they don't have to beat Clemson in the first game. But I do think they have a pretty easy schedule other than the SEC title game against Alabama. But I really like Oklahoma. They don't have a very difficult schedule. Their non-conference game is against Nebraska. The three of us could suit up and find a way to beat Nebraska. And then it comes down to, Baylor and Iowa State and Oklahoma State. And I just think with Spencer Rattler, quarterback, they can manage that. So I think after Alabama, I like Oklahoma the most.
One quick one from me, Paul, because, look, we know where A&M always seems to sit, and they're starting out at number 6 this year, but we were talking about this the other day. When does Jimbo start facing a little bit of pressure to get a quarterback? Because it seems like the history of A&M, they can get everybody else at every other position, but they seem to always struggle getting and or keeping a quarterback, which might be the difference between finally being able to compete with Alabama on the field or just being another team in the SEC at the top.
I agree. I was never impressed with Kellen Mond. I just didn't think he could ever get them over the hump. And he did a really nice job last year, but they were never going to beat Alabama with him. I don't know. I hear a lot about Haynes King, but I'm just giving you stuff that I hear. I have no earthly idea whether he's capable. And I think you're right. I mean, look at Alabama. I was watching this the NFL game last night, and there was Jalen Hurts, who lost his starting job at Alabama. There was Mac Jones for the Patriots, who was the number 3 quarterback a couple of years ago at Alabama. And they're both, I realize Hurts didn't play. But, Alabama, rat-tat-tat has had 3 guys that are now in the NFL, and they all went very high. And you have to have a quarterback. It's essential. And no matter how well Jimbo Fisher is recruiting, and you're right, he has recruited extremely well, until you either sign that guy and develop him or develop somebody into a starting quarterback. Because by the way, Mac Jones was not that heavily recruited. Alabama and Sarkisian in particular helped develop him into a first-round pick. So I think it will happen. I'm very high on Jimbo Fisher. I thought last year was essential because had it been an 8-4 season or whatever the number of games they played, I think people would be criticizing him. But ultimately, he was brought to Texas A&M for $8 million a year to win national championships, not to finish just outside the playoff.
Yeah, it's a great point. All the Aggies I talk to love Haynes King. We'll see what he does with A&M this season. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Great stuff as always.
It was my pleasure. Hope you guys invite me back. Be well.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime, sir.
Paul Feinbaum of ESPN and, of course, the SEC Network.